Hello and welcome to the webinar. My name is Hannah Dyson from Enfield Voices and Global Net 21. And this is one of the regular webinars that we do, exploring local, national and international issues, and also sort of celebrating and talking to people who are doing extraordinary things in the local community. And today I'm delighted to say that we have Vincent Sheehan here to talk about sort of music and his kind of community work that he's doing in his new church. Because Vince is, as well as a musician, he's actually also a local vicar, and he's always been very, very heavily involved in music and community. And we, and in this webinar, we are going to explore how music can direct your life and really heavily influence the decisions you make. So welcome, Vince, to this webinar, and thank you very much for agreeing to talk to us about your musical kind of journey and how this directs your life.
No problem at all. It's a real pleasure to be interviewed. So yeah, it's great to be here. So thank you.
Thank you. And obviously, we in the background, we can see your new home. And obviously, there's been quite a few changes in your life recently.
Yeah.
Could you start off by introducing yourself and telling us a bit about yourself?
Yeah, so I'm a priest in the Church of England, but I'm what's called a self-supporting minister, which means I do it in my my free time. I'm also a primary school teacher, so I earn a living being a teacher, but I also feel called to be a priest. I always have done, and so I kind of do two things. I'm a teacher and a priest, and I'm also a musician. Well, music's been central to my life through all of my life, and it's something I incorporate into my teaching and when I can into my ministry as a priest as well. So it's, and it's something very much I enjoy doing, whether it's writing songs or teaching children songs at school or performing music, whatever it is.
That's brilliant. I think you must be a real inspiration, especially to the little ones in the primary school. Could you tell us a little bit about growing up? Because I know that your dad was a guitarist, and I just wondered, how did that influence maybe your thinking when you were a child in terms of music and how you were like thinking about life in general?
Yes, well, my dad is a fantastic musician. He's a great guitarist. He never really made a career out of it as such, but I grew up and he was playing in covers bands, so we'd quite often go to clubs, kind of, you know, working men's clubs or whatever, watching him play like you know, Eric Clapton or the Beatles or the Rolling Stones or whatever. And yeah, so he's a real big influence, and he's such an amazing guitarist. And he used to teach me the first few chords on the guitar. So he used to sit me down and, you know, teach me just the very basics on the guitar. And eventually I took up the violin at primary school, and I was more interested in the violin than the guitar. Although I still play the guitar, you know, to this day, the violin kind of took over in importance, I guess. So my dad was a massive influence, and he used to play lots of records as well. So things like Jimi Hendrix and the Beatles, and, you know, so I grew up loving kind of 60s and 70s rock music. Yeah. But then I discovered classical music, and that was a real passion as well when I was a bit older.
And then, so what kind of influenced you to maybe study at university? Because I know you studied, was it music first?
Yes.
Classical music at university.
That's right. I had a fantastic violin teacher called Paul De Keyser, he's from a very musical family himself. And he was such an inspiration. You know, he taught in such an engaging, interesting way. And he could see that I had some talent, if you like, because I was from quite a, I suppose, a working class background. And classical music, certainly then, was very much more of a middle class thing. So I used to be go off to these youth orchestras and things, and I, it's very sometimes it's a bit difficult to kind of, you know, make friends, etc. But he was always very encouraging and saying, we should do this and you should enter for this competition and you should learn this piece. So he was a real inspiration. And then I kind of really wanted to be an orchestral violinist. And he kind of put that belief in me to do that. But then at the same time, I was getting into guitar a bit more as well. And I was listening to a lot of rock music. And Liverpool, when I arrived, was such a great place when I arrived to do my degree. You know, it was such an inspiring place in itself. And I think that's what, I think my violin teacher was a real inspiration for me studying music at university.
I think it's often music teachers where you do like tuition, they can sometimes see certain students who have got more of ability than others to go forwards, and he probably saw that in you. Do you think sometimes we're looking at now and like other students maybe in your primary school, how people struggle, families struggle to sort of pay for music lessons because they are quite expensive, and do you find that quite frustrating sometimes?
That's right. And I mean, most of my teaching career has been as a music teacher. So at the moment I'm teaching a year four class, so as a class teacher, but most of my career has been really in with people like me as kids, if you know what I mean, for that background. And just a lot of it is being with them lunchtimes and helping them, you know, play, learn the guitar or the keyboard or the piano, the violin, whatever it is. And as a teacher, you know, it's just part of the job. You're often there after hours helping them out because that's what you want to do. Because I think you can empathize with the children and you can put yourself in their shoes. And you think, well, I know what it's like to be introduced to this whole new world of joy and beauty and excitement, which music is. And you can see that enthusiasm and that love in their eyes for music. And it sounds very cliche, but as a teacher, you just want to really help them as much as you can to experience that, because that's what I experienced as a child, you know. It's just
and it invokes emotion, I guess. If you hear a piece of music like you were hearing your dad play the guitar, and you were hearing your violinist teacher playing the violin, did that invoke emotion? Was there a particular song when you were growing up that inspired you, I don't know, to study music? Was there a particular piece of music that you thought, right, that's it, I've got to study music now?
Yeah, there was. I remember one Christmas, I had this, I was given this cassette player, like, you know.
I know.
Cassette, that's how old I am, And it was such, and I thought, wow, this is like amazing. And I thought, and then I realised I didn't have any cassettes to play. But then I was also given another present, luckily, with some tapes. And one of them was called The Best of Classical Music, something like that. Best of Baroque Music, which is a particular kind of classical music from the 17th and early 18th centuries. And I was just listening to this and I was just spellbound by this music, people like J.S. Bach and Handel and Vivaldi. And I was listening to one of the pieces, which is the Bach double violin concerto.
Yeah.
And I didn't have the music for it, the sheet music. So I started to try and learn it by ear. And I lived in quite a, it wasn't a really kind of tough area or anything, but it wasn't the kind of place we'd hear classical music. So I used to try and play this in my bedroom window. There's like these youths used to congregate outside in the street. with their little cans of beer or whatever. And they used to give me a clap. And so I used to
really?
Try. Yeah, so I just used to play this.
That'd be great.
That's beautiful. I used to like just, and I didn't have the music, so I'd learnt it by ear. And sometimes I see children today when I teach them music, and I think, wow, you've got that thing where you can hear a tune and you can get up and you can play it without any help, you know, you just work out the note, etc. So that's what I used to do. And eventually I was given, I learned how to read music, so I managed to get the proper music and not have to keep working it out in my head as such. Yeah, so eventually, as I had more music lessons, I learned to read music and I began to get, go to music shops. And I used to just practice all the time. I just loved it. You know, I just practiced. Used to do Vivaldi. Things like that.
So famous.
All those, I used to play all those pieces. And then I did all my grades. And it was a nice time because, families are never perfect. And, you know, it was a bit of a tough time in many respects. In some respects it was wonderful, but some respects it wasn't so great sometimes. But music was so such a refuge and a place of safety and the place of enjoyment, you know, it's really good. Yeah.
And you can kind of like, when you're achieving that kind of mastery of the playing the violin, you kind of work through thoughts and feelings as you're growing up, because it's obviously difficult for everyone sort of growing up and dealing with family issues and schoolwork and everything. So I think music can be like a gift like that.
It can, yeah. It's such a healthy way to express yourself. It really is. You can just feel so much, just more content, and gives you a bit of energy and a bit of enthusiasm to approach the next day. And, you know, I think it's really good for mental health, obviously, as well. Just puts you in such a good frame of mind if you're engaged in music in some capacity.
And do you think there's a link between your musical upbringing and wanting to become a priest? Do you think there's like a link?
I think that's a really interesting question. I think music is a deeply spiritual thing. I think even non-religious people would say that there's something, you know, which they perhaps can't completely explain when they're completely swept away by a lovely piece of music. And I think it was never a complete link. For many years, I saw them as opposing forces, actually, because I wanted to be a successful musician, but something inside of me wanted to be a priest as well. And I saw them almost at loggerheads. And it took me a great number of years to realise that, in a way, they're both the same. They're two different sides of the same coin, in terms of music can bring, I believe anyway, as a Christian and a priest as well, that music can bring somewhere. It's like a foretaste of what heaven is like. It's something so wonderfully free and unencumbered by music, which kind of can take us out of our everyday existences and just kind of free us up. There's something so joyful and beautiful about it. It's like a foretaste of heaven. That's how I see music. And I think music, more than the other arts, perhaps, is even more powerful, because there's something which we can almost can't articulate, it's difficult to articulate the power of music. And I think that's because there's something which approaches the divine about it. I think St. Augustine, he famously said that when you sing, you pray twice. So I think there's such a close connection between music and spirituality, and this kind of closeness with God and the heavenly things, if you like.
Yeah. And could you tell us a bit more about your writing as well? Because I know that you like to, you have written songs, and I found it quite interesting when you said to me that you actually have written songs, or you gained inspiration for your songs when you were on the Victoria Line. You were kind of doing a journey on the Victoria Line, and you've actually written some songs, and that became an album.
Yeah, so my real passion actually was not so much performance. For a long time, it was writing songs, and I was in a few rock bands, and in Liverpool as a student. When I got back to London, I was in a band called My Octopus George. We used to play around all the pubs and clubs around Camden and all those areas. And we recorded some songs, etc. And then that kind of stopped because I had a family and I was a bit older. But the kind of desire to write music didn't leave me. And I thought, right, well, I'm going to make time to write an album. And I was sitting on the tube one day, and I just thought, I wonder if anyone's ever done an album and they've recorded a song for each of the tube stations. And I thought, well, that's like hundreds and hundreds. I can never do that. But I was on the Victoria Line, and that was 16 stops. And I thought, well, that sounds like a good album's length. And so I went home and I just bought a Mac computer, and I just started writing music on it. And eventually I started with Walthamstow Central and eventually ended up in Brixton. And at the time, I started it in 2012 and I finished it about 2015 when I performed it live as well for a band. And it was quite exciting because I was interviewed on the BBC London website, and some of it was played on Radio 6 as well. So it's quite an exciting time, you know. And at the time, it was a busy time because I was beginning to train as a priest as well, which is a bit later on in my life. I've only been a priest about 5 years. That was really good. And
did you actually write the songs when you were on the like the underground? Like, did you jot any ideas down and then you wrote it when you got back, or how?
I was looking at the stops on this journey and I thought, I've got many connections with these. I remember meeting my wife for our first date by Euston Station. So, I used to work near Oxford Circus. There's just loads, most of the stations I had a connection to.
Yeah.
But then I thought, I'm not just going to write it about my own personal life. I'm going to try and incorporate historical figures and other people and ideas associated with the areas as well. So it became more of a project, really.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's good.
And you created an album from that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
If anyone wants one, I've got about 500 in.
That's amazing. I mean, I'm just interested as well, because we did do a webinar with an author who actually every morning he was writing a book on the train, and I think possibly also the Victoria Line as well. So I think that obviously people sitting there doing that same journey, or the journey means a lot to them and kind of creates them that creativity in people. So I find that really, really fascinating. And the other song that's kind of really influenced you or made you want to write more songs is the Beatles' I Am the Walrus.
Yeah.
I thought that was quite interesting.
Yeah, because that was when I was a kid, my dad had the big double album. It's like a blue, there's a blue and a red album, like the kind of Beatles' greatest hits, I suppose. And he had, and I remember listening to the blue one, and I remember listening to that song, I Am the Walrus, and thinking, wow, this is so incredible. It's like, they're just so odd and weird, but so interesting.
Yeah. And I think one of the interesting things about that particular song is I think Lennon wrote that after he got a letter from his old secondary school, and the student had said that they were analysing some old Beatles songs, and he thought, actually, I really want to make it quite hard for them. So he wrote this really difficult song and said, right, try and analyse that.
Oh, OK. I didn't really know that. But yeah, that makes sense. I mean, it's just a complete one-off. I mean, it's just such an amazing... I mean, I love all the Beatles songs. But I that really had a strong effect on me. And I think also I remember being really ill as well at the time. I had encephalitis, which is like this brain thing with brain spells, and I was having hallucinations. I was listening to this at the same time, and it was just very odd, you know.
That's interesting.
I'm sure the Beatles were having hallucinations for different reasons, but I just like something about that time and the music just kind of fed off each other, you know.
I do believe, interestingly, that Lennon wrote that song as well when he had hallucinations, but for a different reason.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And do you think you will? I mean, you've already said you're inspiring your students. How do you see that manifesting in your students? Do you see quite a lot of them want to take up music lessons, or just kind of going away, going to their home and actually just practicing on their own, kind of a musical instrument that will, like the clarinet or the violin, that they particularly enjoy?
Currently, I'm not teaching music as a discrete subject. I'm a class teacher in primary school. But having said that, I do always sing with them, because I think singing's such a wonderful thing to do. And I think it really does reinvigorate people's attention spans, and just makes them really enthusiastic about learning. And I have taught a boy the piano actually recently, who I thought was very talented, and I just kind of helped him in my spare time, and he really is very talented. And, you know, it's enough, you know, and it's so nice to see someone really develop, you know, and have that skill and have the opportunity to work on it.
And one of the other songs that inspires you today, I've got written down, is the Brahms Symphony No. 4, that you described as the most beautiful music ever and continues to inspire you today.
Yeah, it's lovely. So Brahms, when I got into classical music, Brahms was a great inspiration, because it's, I just find his music is full of kind of melancholy, but it's like an autumn day. It's a really beautiful, if you can imagine the leaves turning golden and falling along the street, you know, and there's this really powerful sense of kind of a sadness, but a very beautiful sadness about the music. And the fourth symphony, I just love the way it opens. It's got this very beautiful melody. I'm going to try and play a bit on the piano. I've got the piano here.
Thank you.
It begins like this. I don't know. I'm just trying to remember it. There's something like that anyway. It's a very beautiful opening to a symphony. It's really lovely. So yeah, Brahms is a really lovely, beautiful composer, if you want to get into that, classical music.
That was written, I think, a year after the third symphony.
That's right, yes. Right? Yeah, 1884, I think it was written.
And when you listen to that piece of music, what sort of emotions is it? But I know you're thinking, you know, like autumnal, changing of the seasons. What other emotions does that conjure up for you personally?
I think with Brahms, well, I think what's interesting about Brahms is that he wasn't a particularly, as a priest, he wasn't a religious person. He didn't really have a strong faith. But I think his music, for me, still speaks a lot of about God through the sheer beauty of it. And for me, for someone like Brahms, just shows how wonderful music is. And it's just for everybody. And someone who doesn't even believe in God necessarily can just produce something so amazingly beautiful, which speaks about the divine possibly more than, say, a hymn would do or a religious song. Do you know? So I just find it very inspiring.
That's interesting that you say more than a hymn would do, because obviously with hymns you have words. It's very kind of word heavy, and you listen to the words that are written all over different times. But this is purely you hear the motion through the
music,
the music.
For me, it's always just the music, the power of the music, not so much the words. Really wonderful.
Thank you. And could you tell us a little bit about your community work? Because I know that at St. George's, where you were obviously a vicar at St. George's, and
that's right,
you and Father Tamen were involved in community work. Can you tell us a bit about that, as opposed to what you're involved in a bit now as well?
Yeah, so St. George's, well, again, I was really supporting Father Tamen in what, because most of the week I'm with the children, but really it's just helping people, maybe listening to people, particularly through COVID, and as you know, he started this Thoughts for the Night, which I was doing every Thursday until recently. And I think it's just being available for people, really. Just being, I guess, just being there if people need you, if they want to, because quite often you have people who give you a ring, or they'll meet you in the church and they've got something on their mind and you can just chat with them or pray about it. So really, yeah. And then I know in St. Peter's, I've only really just started there, but there's the Cooking Champions there, who I think use the premises, don't they? And I think they do a lot of good work helping families in Enfield. And I'm looking forward to, really, I haven't really got going there yet, but just to see what the needs are in that particular part of Enfield and helping out where I can there, you know.
Because Cooking Champions has really taken off. I know they have, like, on Friday night at St. Peter's, Grange Park, they have an evening where you can support their work. Can you tell us about those evenings?
Yes, absolutely. But yes, I think it's important for the church to... to engage with the community it finds itself in. And I think particularly the Church of England, where there's a parish church in every locality, I think it's important for the church to realise, really understand what the needs of that community are and what the makeup of that community is, and reflect that in some way.
Definitely.
Yeah. I'm hoping once I get more, I've been since Peter's, a bit longer, I'll begin to work out what's needed there.
Yeah, no, definitely.
Important Father Stephen, of course, who is the Father Stephen Coleman, who is the vicar there.
And you, and at St. George's, I know Father Tamen and you were involved in the Felix Project. So every, I think it's a Thursday evening.
So
you can go there.
Yeah, so people who need some food, then there was people who drove around giving, and I know many people who benefited from that. I think it's very much just being a person, you know, just being a positive presence in the community.
To help people and
help people, because I think as a speaking in, with my priest hat on, it's what we should be doing. You know, if you're if you believe in the Bible, if you believe in Jesus Christ, you should be that kind of life-giving presence in the community, and in whatever way you feel you can do that, whether it's through listening to people or helping them with their shopping or visiting people in hospital, whatever it might be. And for me, most of it actually is with children. I see very much my role as a priest and my teaching with children is very kind of, there's a lot of, they're very interconnected, I think, because you're seeing, you're wishing the other person, in my case, children, to flourish and be alive as much as possible in every sense. So,
and what do you see your plans for the future? Do you want to sort of write more music? Do you want to do more teaching? Do you want to bring out more albums?
I want to write more music because I think, because I've kind of got three things on the go, if you like, my teaching, my ministry as a priest, and being a musician, I think the musician side of me has been neglected in recent years, purely because of time constraints. So I'd like to have a project, a bit like the Victoria Line project. I'd like to do something, you know, and just write some more material, really, because that I feel so, from a purely selfish point of view, I just feel so, it just feels so amazing to be engaged in something like that, and you just get completely lost in it. And it's I suppose it must be like an artist who is really into painting, because I know you do a bit of crafts and things, don't you, Hannah, and painting. I know I've seen maybe your kids do, I don't know, but when you do like painting and stuff, you're really lost in it, aren't you? And you know, and I guess it's a bit like that when you're writing music.
And definitely, and I think obviously you've been very busy, you've moved house, you've moved church, you've been very busy helping people through COVID and teaching. So I think sometimes with music or writing music, or as you say, being an artist and drawing and painting, can go on the back burner. And I think sometimes we have to say, right, we need to get back into it now, because this is what like part of my soul, this is what makes me kind of man. So yeah, I think that happens to a lot of people. But and then lastly, because we're coming to the end of this webinar, but could you let us know how to find your YouTube channel? Because I know you've actually got two YouTube channels about analyzing music, and was it your songs on another one? I think,
well, I've got if you want to listen to my songs, that's on there's a web page called SoundCloud where you can listen to songs, and if you put in my name, it should come up, or it's called The Royal Vincident. If you put that in, it should come up, The Royal Vincident. And then I do a channel which is really, it's kind of for people who are really into classical music, and I kind of explore symphonies and things.
And that's quite an academic
It's very channel, more, isn't it? Not like it's a bit geeky. it's really kind of pulling a piece apart and really kind of analyzing it, really, because I enjoy doing that, actually. And I have another one which I don't tell many people about, but I did tell you, Hannah, and that's where I look at films and books and things. I like reading and I like watching films.
Fantastic.
And that's just another, that's kind of like just looking at stuff and giving my thoughts and
Actually, that last one I might be interested in, because I do love film. Well, I like reading more than films, so I love to hear what people think.
I'm just like, anything I read or watch, if I think it's worthwhile, I'll do a little video about it.
Brilliant. Yeah, so we'll put at the end of this webinar, we'll separately put the links maybe to these YouTube channels and where people can listen to your music. And if people want to contact you about writing music or any kind of anything they want to contact you about, like maybe some questions, how are they best to contact you?
I think via my just via my email, I think that's probably the best thing.
Okay.
Yeah. So I think that'll probably be on there, won't it? Royal Vincident at iCloud.
We'll put that on as well. Yeah. And then now we'll give you the royal wave and say thank you very much for your time today and going through all these questions and playing a little bit of music for us. It's been brilliant.
Okay.
Thank you, Vince.
Thank you, Hannah. That's great. Thank you.